Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're about to listen to an interview which our socios enjoyed in full 12 months ago. If you'd like to listen to these exclusive monthly big interviews on the day that they're released, it's time to join us. That means supporting us. It means the price of a pint per month. Go to Patreon, patreon.com/Graham Hunter. Go now, join and become a socio. That means you'll get that extra big interview every month and you'll also unlock our entire archive straight away. All for £2.99 a month. It's the best deal in town, baby. And we need you. Hello there, big interview listeners. David Preece is a football analyst who forces you to think different thoughts about the game we all love. Through his journalism and broadcasting, he's carved out a really impressive niche as an expert and an articulate expert on the art of goalkeeping. The analysis of that position has tended to be a cliche minefield, scattered with lazy reflections on how goalkeepers are all mad and how they should never be beaten at their near post. David has taken the debate to a new level. Plus, he's a dandy and extremely funny. So we simply had to have him on the big interview. Enjoy David Preece in TalkSport Studios. A very funny, very bright man who's going places. Probably his top corner for a fingertip save.
Well, we were talking about this this way in which keeper analysis is often wrong, and now it's a bugbear, and you're doing a lot of clinical communication to adjust people's understanding. How did football develop with us improving our manner of understanding diet or training or recuperation and 3-5-2 or wing-backs or false nines? Just about everybody went, well, we don't really have to say anything more about keepers than what we've always said. How did that happen?
It's going back to like the German and the Russians, that's how they are seen. We see footballers differently. I know that maybe the Dutch see that the goalkeepers differently, where they think that it's the worst player that goes in goal. I remember, is it Ruud Gullit who said that? The worst players go in goal. Or maybe it's been
that's all right in the playground. No, yeah, I understand that, but
you were seen as just not as important. I mean, I didn't have a full-time goalkeeping coach till I was 17, till sort of my second year at Sunderland, when Jimmy Montgomery became my youth team coach.
The great Jimmy Montgomery.
I
forget your birthday. You're too young to have seen that day, aren't you?
Oh, no, yeah. But, I mean, I was still brought up wearing T-shirts with Monty flying across the...
If anybody hasn't seen that, that's the FA Cup final against a mighty Leeds side. And, like, I've seen a lot in football, but I haven't seen many days when a goal mouth is battered the way it was then, and Jimmy Montgomery just said, "Thou shalt not pass."
That is, I mean, we talk about the bank save and things like that, but to me, that's the best save there's ever been.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's all the stories rolled into that because of, you know, the massive underdogs against the mighty Leeds, and just a brilliant double save that won them the cup.
So you were handed down this idea that keepers were important because your dad, Jimmy Montgomery. Why have you picked on Germany and Russia and saying that they venerate their keepers differently? How have you learned that?
I was just reading up on them. I didn't see it studying goalkeepers, but I was just sort of really wanting to... Everything that I could get my hands on when I was younger about... My two favourite goalkeepers when I was younger was Bruce Grobbelaar and Neville Southall.
Quite different.
Yeah, very different.
Stylistically.
Very different, but I think... I love the way that, obviously, the way that Bruce played the game. And it was totally different from anything else at the time. And but with Neville Southall, I just loved his sort of his work ethic. I remember I was a kid, I went to Everton's training ground.
Belfield.
Yeah, it was Belfield. Just watching him train. Every training session I watched him, because I went down there a few times, he never left anything. Every bit of ounce of energy he had was used in training. Mm-hmm. And he was somebody who, if I could read anything about him, I would always try and look it up. And I just wish there was the internet back then. So
yeah.
It was about work ethic and about his warm-ups. I remember reading about his warm-ups, how sometimes he would just have a bath for a warm-up. Then other days he would go out at 1:30 before a game. And it always changed throughout his career. And it was his work ethic and Martin Hodge at Sheffield Wednesday. Mm-hmm. Not a keeper that I particularly sort of admired or had watched a great deal, but I read quite a bit about him, just a few articles that I picked up, and it was people talking about him, how he's the most hardest working goalkeeper who worked his game every day, and that's what I took into my game. Whether I wasn't talented enough, or whether I was, whether I was going to be lucky or not, I was going to work hard. That's what I decided, and I think that was my biggest asset more than anything.
And when you match that with what you already said was an attitude for deconstructing things, analysing things, that's maybe been the combination that leaves you now, having had a good career, able to transmit things. Or analytically, do you consider yourself somebody who could go in and make goalkeepers at any level, potentially make them better?
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason why I came out of full-time coaching. I really do believe that. It's no arrogance or anything like that, but I just think I've got a great eye for picking up things that I think what's wrong, making little improvements in games. But certainly it's sort of from 16 and upwards. But I think it's just because, like I said, go back to the analysing my own game, that I over-analysed it. So it was detrimental in one that I thought too much about it. Mm. It became a negative thing because I'd dwell on mistakes. Maybe it's not sort of beat myself up too much about, which I did quite a lot, but most of the time I would just be replaying over and over, say to myself, where should I be? Mm. What should I have done here? But this was in the game, and which is, anybody will tell you that it's not the time to do it. And the best keepers just sort of, best players, if a striker misses a chance, you just shut off and then you think about it later.
But I
couldn't do that, and mistakes, in the end, mistakes just ate away at me.
To the extent of distracting you by a percentage in a game that was significant enough to be detrimental.
Yeah, it might not be noticeable to anybody, but concentration just has to be come down 10%, especially for a goalkeeper. And you talk about athletes talk about being in the zone. So I'd read up a lot on sports psychology and how to get into that zone, that form of concentration. Whatever that zone is, you don't have to. You don't think, and that's the best thing about it. When you're in that sort of have that mentality, you don't think at all.
It's automatic.
Yeah, like it's almost like when you're driving somewhere, and you drive from A to B for an hour, and you couldn't tell anybody what was happening on the road, but you just don't know autopilot. That's what happens when you're playing a good game. It goes quickly, and you don't have to worry about it at all. But those games are few and far between for me, perhaps.
Then. Have Saturday nights been really unhappy times for you since you stopped playing
Saturday nights were unhappy times for me when I played, simply because if I didn't win then that was it. It was awful.
You're quite serious about this, aren't you?
Massively. I've ruined far too many Saturday nights and weekends for other people. I remember we got beat off Newcastle when I was in the youth team at Sunderland, and it was my birthday, and all my friends had a party, and I just didn't leave the house. I just didn't want to go out. But so many nice restaurants and not spoken a word. And
we'll turn the page on that.
Yeah.
I was also thinking that if you ever tried to lose yourself on a Saturday night, I'm sorry, I'm going to be blunt here, by watching Match of the Day, if you had a heavy object near you, you must have been throwing them at the screen for every expression of near post, keeper will be disappointed. You must have been screaming and begging for do your job better than that.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't blame outfield players for that.
I disagree. I think it's not a two-way street.
No,
I think keepers can talk about outfield play perfectly adequately because you actually do just about all the same elements in your job that they do, apart from maybe scoring.
Well, maybe I'm being kind. The frustration came initially because everything was just, that was good, you should have done better, and then that was it, and it was left.
Detail, no nuance.
No, but I still think that it's the same for outfield players as well. Whether it's possible to go into detail during the games or as much at half time or whatever. Do you know what I mean? It's I've also said about the master classes that they do with the cricket on Sky, how they go through. I think I just find them fascinating.
Me too.
Just the real fine details.
No, I really. Okay, so let's say they'll take them indoors, they'll have the wicket set up, and they'll bowl in a couple of balls, and they'll be talking. There'll be two or three people talking all the time, so that you get the bowling action, you get whatever shot, whatever pitch of the ball they're talking about. And they've got three or four experts, and even then, none of it's black and white. They're all open to concepts, and you'll have maybe Warren, maybe the greatest spin bowler we've ever seen. Murali, I don't know, but whatever. And they'll say, okay, Shane, what would you do? And they say, I'd try and lead him into this, lead him this, and then do that. And they'll be like, yeah, probably they've lost a wicket to him 10, 15, 20, maybe more times. But they'll all be talking, and yeah, but if you, and would you, and could you, it, to me, that develops the art, if you're willing to talk about it as something that's a malleable concept, not black and white. Well, of course you do this, and of course you do that.
But even when I'm seeing my stuff on Twitter, or I'm writing up some analysis, I say I'm perhaps more forthright than I should be. Maybe not forthright's not the right word. It isn't black and white, really. But what I'm saying, I'm just saying it from my perspective in the way that I see goalkeeping. Now, there'll still be plenty of people out there who are goalkeepers who might disagree with some of the finer points that I make, and because there's more than one way to skin a cat. You know, there's so many different sort of techniques and styles to use. Even some of the basics, you go from country to country and they teach them different ways. Now, I've been lucky enough that when I was a teenager, was coached by Alan Hodgkinson. It was like,
oh, do you coach Scotland, coach Gorham, coached at Rangers. Yeah. Gorham had six arms, man. His eye to ball and his hand to ball stuff is spooky.
Do you know what? When I first went up to Scotland and I played Motherwell on a Tuesday night or something like that, and never met the bloke in my life. Didn't just assume. Well, I mean, he obviously knew where I was because I'm playing against him. You know what I mean? But I just assumed that he wouldn't bother with me. So after the game, just comes over, starts talking to me. He was big mates with Jim Leighton. Him and Jim were really close. Another bit of a rivalry in that, but they were really close. And he says, "Oh, you know, what are you doing after the game?" I says, "Oh, mum, dad, up. Oh, yeah, wait for us and I'll come in." He just sat with me, mum and my dad, and just chatting for ages and just asking how things were, and took a real sort of interest, and it meant a lot to me, that.
Sure.
But there again, that's the name, Andy Gorham, Jim Leighton. Don't talk to me about great goalkeepers the last 40 years, British goalkeepers, without mentioning those two. David Seaman's a great goalkeeper. Mm-hmm. But I still think that Jim and Andy were better goalkeepers than him.
Without being partisan, I have to agree. I watched Jim, although even at his finest, you looked at him and you wouldn't automatically say any kind of footballer, never mind a goalkeeper. No. Spindly, kind of lanky. Yeah, we didn't know about his contact lenses then. Even in the 80s, was that a prototype look for a footballer?
Not
and yet, I watched the true greats of European football, even in the season that Aberdeen didn't win the Cup Winners' Cup, where we progressed, come, and he would do the most remarkable gymnastic things. I don't know whether it was technique or instinct or a blend of both.
Honestly, it wasn't technique, because, I mean, when I first went there, I was like, because I was very much into my technique even at that age, and then I'd watch him train, 40-year-old, he did everything that you, well, not everything, but most things he did were what you were taught not to do. Mm-hmm. So, like, he'd jump in the air when the ball came and he had this sort of funny hand position, that, but everything stuck and you couldn't get by him. And like you said, he just didn't look like a goalkeeper. But he's more than a goalkeeper, he's some man.
His force of personality in that back three, if you talk about the Miller, McLeish, Leighton, and it's easy and lazy to say, well, he had this iron curtain in front of him, which he did, but he bossed them about, and they're two brutal characters.
Well, I mean, when you see the three of them together, they're sort of like, it's sort of them two against him, sort of like they're the two sort of like a prefect, and he's the young lad. Like, you know, it was a lot of it. He didn't look like a goalkeeper, but up there, and to come through what he came through, leaving United, and totally rebuilding himself, and rebuilding his reputation to start at the 1998 World Cup against Brazil. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was before I knew him. And then sort of after I knew him and got to know him, just...
It's an extraordinary man, and I agree with you about Gorham. And I like your idea that probably they were... They don't get the same recognition as Seaman because he was England, because he was Arsenal, but fewer, certainly in Gorham's case, fewer high-profile mistakes.
The accusation you've seen about that, that Jim was playing behind sort of a rock in McLeish and Miller. Seaman was playing behind.
He wasn't unlucky with his choice.
No, exactly, yeah.
And also if you throw in blooming Bold and Keown and in his day, blooming a big old... David O'Leary.
Oh, yeah.
So whether you think of a Dixon and Winterburne and Adams and Keown or Bold, who are vastly underrated defender, Steve Bold, vastly underrated, or David O'Leary, Seaman had it. He had it pretty good, didn't he?
Yeah.
And in the midfield, at a certain stage, with blooming Petit and Vieira biting people's ankles. Yeah. Point made. It's time for a sponsor question from Bet365, who support us and are behind us. I've got three I can choose. Do you want A, B or C?
Oh, A.
Good, very good choice. What are the best and worst things about being a goalkeeper?
Do you know the best thing about being a goalkeeper is being different? That's one of the reasons why it felt right to be a goalkeeper. Dress differently, wear the gloves. The worst is probably that moment when the ball goes past you. You know, you could describe it as the net rustling, or it's a combination of things. It's a unique noise when the ball hits the back of the net, or it hits the post. Perhaps that's the worst moment, when you hear the ball hit the post and you turn around in hope and it's still in the back of the net rather than bouncing straight out again. It's funny, you know, sometimes when you get older, you get it's easier to deal with either disappointments or things that do affect you when you're younger. But that's one thing that got worse as I got older.
Pit to the stomach?
Oh, horrible. Horrible. I think I had a couple of seasons where I worked with a sports psychologist, my last 3 years at Aberdeen, where I tried to take emotion out of it. Mm-hmm. And even though I probably played my best football then, I didn't enjoy it. And it's almost that sort of the pain...
Pain and the pleasure, you have to have it.
Yeah. And that's what you miss. People say you miss camaraderie in the dressing room and the banter. For that, you just miss being around people. That's what it is. It's not... One Saturday morning might be butterflies. The next Saturday morning, it might be sort of like nauseous.
Yeah.
But you have to have
fear and risk to live. Mm. Living isn't about getting by. You have to risk things. Mm. You have to be in the game. And whatever that brings with it.
Working in here, or working at a live game, and doing sort of like live core comms or doing live radio, that's the first time I've really felt anything like that. Mm. Where it's sort of... People might call it a buzz, like, you know, but it's the first time that I've felt anywhere near that.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I remember once we had a little Twitter direct message conversation about Claudio Bravo. And it was really evident that you were soaking up everything you could learn about him in order to be able to talk about him properly in that mode that I love about you and other ex-pros, managers or footballers, where I respect that they do their work as well as just saying what they see. You studied him and you watched him and you looked at... I think you were expecting Pep Guardiola in that instance to have signed a goalkeeper who had very good footballing skills when under pressure, the ball at his feet, not just... People, even now that we're talking about that, for my taste at least, people talk about, like, can he control it and kick it? Mm. Whereas what we're actually asking is, Is the control quite natural? Is he a footballer? Is he an outfield footballer? Mm. It's 11 footballers. And is his brain good about, if they're not moving for me and showing the right position, I'll make sure that they do, and I'll get them to spread, and I'll make sure they take responsibility. Does he make the right choices with the ball? Because effectively, when he's a goalkeeper's pressed, he's like a pivoting midfielder, just not in the middle of the park. It's the same decision-making process about when's the press coming, what time do I have, is the ball under control, who do I pick, what is the strategy about why I pick, all that kind of stuff. Steph, on that basis, where do you stand on the way in which two clubs play a different brand of football from one another, have invested in Brazilian keepers? Have you been looking at Ederson, Alisson, and what's your thoughts, your summation on them?
Well, I've changed. I mean, of course, football changes, so you've got to change with it. But I've totally changed my perspective on goalkeepers dealing with back passes, because it probably comes from, actually, it does come from what we talked about my childhood, when you talk about that fear and having sort of like that fear inducing anxiety, that kind of sort of never left me. So like I was always thought or convinced myself that everything should be safety first. It was ultra safe. Mm-hmm. So back when I was at Darlington, I took Monty with me. Manager David Hodgson asked me if I wanted as a goalkeeping coach, and I said Monty.
And
took Monty with us. And even back then, we used to talk about playing triangles in and around the outside the box, and so that eventually, in three passes, you would be beyond the defenders and the striker, and literally joining in. I've not really seen many other. I've seen people come out of the box, Neuer and Ter Stegen and the two Brazilian lads. No problem, they'll join outside the box, but you don't have an overlapping goalkeeper. And that's what Monty was talking about. And he was talking about, he wished we could play 4-3-3.
So we're talking in the region of 94, 95, 96-ish?
97, it'd be 97,
okay.
98.
Okay.
And we talked about it, and there was two drawbacks that Feetham's was only good for planting potatoes on. Darlington's football ground, okay. The old football ground, and we had a real problem with the surface where we tried everything. They brought worms from Old Trafford to aerate the pitch, and we ended up having playing FA Cup games at the Riverside, Middlesbrough ground.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that was a problem.
Listen, you're talking to a complainer. Pitodri was never that great. Neither.
No, it wasn't. To be honest with you.
No.
That was it.
The problem with Feetham's is that you can never. The bobble's crazy, right? It's not made for technique and calm when you receive a ball in a triangle.
Yeah, exactly. You're always having to take a touch to get the ball under control first. But also, at that time, you're 5 years into the back pass rule, and defenders didn't want to know.
Get it away.
When the ball came back to you, and normally it would come back to you up here, they weren't bothered how it came back to you.
When you said up here, it came back to you. One, you've got a particular player in mind who always used to give you. You've kind of done like bodyline bowling. You said the ball's coming up to you. He's gone for his Adam's apple there. So if the ball's been put to you up at your neck.
The defenders weren't bothered about sort of care about how
they handed you their problem.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I'll bet you they turned their back and all.
All you saw was four arses. So you couldn't.
Your problem now.
Yeah, and so you just had to hit it first time, and people were sort of rushing at you, so to try and hurry you. So it wasn't really the right environment to try and play football. It wasn't until really I went to Denmark that we did our goalkeeping separately, but not just 40 minutes before training, then joining with everyone else. We did it separately in the morning and afternoon, and we just trained as normal. So we do the passing drills, do the position drills, which was
that's obviously
beneficial. When I went away with teams, particularly with Aberdeen, we go to Holland, Germany, wherever. And when I was in Denmark, you go away to training camps. So I'd go to the local clubs, wherever it was, Twente or,
Snellers, hello.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And go and watch them train, or try to pick up something. And I was always looking for, like, the magic pill that would make me the greatest goalkeeper that ever lived. And, you know, whatever drill it was, whatever technique they were using. And do you know what? Most of the time, you go to these places and you've not seen anything. They're not doing anything different from what we're doing. Mm-mm. So I'd go and see. I think Victor might have just come into the team at.
If you're talking, I suppose when you went to Denmark, I suppose we're talking about mid 2000s or
2005 to 2009.
Yeah, so Victor was certainly the first choice keeper in 2005-06. Mm. Pepe Reina had gone to Villarreal, so
Pepe wasn't there.
Been Victor, yeah.
Yeah, so like remember watching him train, and it was really basic stuff. But I mean, they just come from a tour somewhere, and then they were just doing a few live sessions. I think who was the other one? Who was a goalkeeper there? I can't remember who the goalkeeper was, but they would go on the side of the pitch and they would use them as sort of like, you know, possession. And those two players and Samuel Eto'o were the three best players in those sessions.
I don't know whether it was the case, whether just to keep him happy, because every time, I mean, it was probably about a dozen times I watched over the years, I watched them train. He was always the joker, you know, playing for both sides and only had two touches. Rijkaard always made him the...
You know, he's really... I like you call it the joker. So it's the guy who can maybe, like, you wear this odd-coloured...
Whoever's in possession...
You're the comedian, you play
exactly,
for both.
Yeah.
So that's a common exercise that you knew and saw in your...
Yeah, but most of the time that was just used for odd numbers, but you can see with... With him, there was a purpose to it.
It's quite a common thing in Spanish training. And I suppose the idea is... it keeps everybody around you mentally sharp, because you've got the ball and you're passing them, and the instant that you haven't got the ball, he's on the other side instantly and in tight spaces. So your alertness has to change, and so does the player himself. I've always thought it's about your mind there.
But most of the time it doesn't matter who it is, whichever team you're watching or who's training. Most of the time that player can be quite passive. So like they're just used if they're needed, where everything just came through him, and he was, you know, changing his position all the time and wanting the ball, and I didn't appreciate him until then.
So you're in, where are we? We're in Aarhus, in the middle of the street, and you're watching Victor Valdez, and you went to study that, because we were talking then about, you know, the way in which you were linking what you saw there to what you see now with Alisson and Ederson. You said that when I offered you a chance to talk about like what you see in the two of them, to your satisfaction as an analyst, you immediately went, well, I've changed my idea about pressing and passing and the six-yard box and what keepers want to be doing there, because it's utterly distinct from what you had in your playing life.
It is, and it's, we have to look at a different perspective now, that the people that I speak to about it, and I really, really love him because he's got great ideas. A guy called Tim Dittmer, who's at the FA now, he's head of goalkeeping development. I love talking to him. Don't talk to him enough.
Let's give him praise again. Tim?
Tim Dittmer.
Tim Dittmer, okay.
D-I-T-T-M-E-R.
That's big praise.
And you know, you're looking for somebody who's an innovator, who's doing something a little different and thinking a little bit differently, and that's what I was always looking for. So it's about taking the fear out of goalkeeping, and especially with the ball at your feet. Now, I spoke about, you know, overlapping goalkeepers and that, and it was a bit tongue-in-cheek, but if we could do that, that would be sort of utopia. Because then you really have the... not sweeper keeper.
11 footballers.
So to do that, you take the goal out of it. So if you take the goal out of it, you take the fear out of it and the risk. So then players would react and position themselves and move the way they would in midfield or up front. And that's it. And ideally, you'd want the ball in the corner so you get everything tracked over that way and then come out the other side. So everyone's tracked down there, you go to hit them down the weak side. And
overloading, like it's a pep technique to overload, bring, come on into my parlour,
yeah,
and
exactly.
Spider to the fly, bosh, change of direction. Would you have, despite the anxiety, if you'd been asked to play and, you know, you were a trendy young goalkeeper at Aberdeen, Pep takes over at Manchester City and he signs you, how would you have confronted that task? I mean, playing philosophically his way.
One, I'd have loved it because I was the type of person who loved instruction from my manager. I wanted him to tell me what he wanted to do, and if he told me what to do, I'd do it, no problem. Denmark changed things for me because, one, I was training as an outfield player more. I was given a little bit more time on the ball. In Denmark, it wasn't all about, when the ball went back to me, nobody was herring towards me at 100 miles an hour, like in England.
Because predominantly in Denmark, they all understood that that's often, unless you do it in the right way, a waste of time, because technique's quite good. And the reason we all do it is we all think, well, the other guy won't be able to control it, because we've never put such a high premium as the continental clubs and nations have on, like, first touch, if don't come running here, they'll be gone. Come if you want.
Yeah. And then that's exactly it. Because they would think, oh, well, why am I doing that for? It's stupid. I'm just going to stand here. Then we'll see how good a passer they
are.
But then ultimately, it's about the manager. And as, like I said, you know, I keep talking about taking the fear away from football. One of the best things that happened to me when I first went to Darlington, Peter Reid had told me that the conversation kind of went, I'll give you another year. You haven't been playing very well. I had two broken arms in the space of two seasons. He said, your decision-making's been off. He was looking to bring somebody else in. it was a year before Thomas Sorensen came in. We said, we're going to bring somebody else in. He says, you could be in a year's time. He says, you know, love you to bits, think attitude's great. He says, but we could be sat here and be in the exact same position. So, I mean, without saying, I'm letting you go, he's kind of convincing me that I need to go. And he was right. So I went and played like a reserve game for Darlington. David Hodgson came in. And I'd been to Belgium to talk to a club in Belgium, came back, didn't really fancy it. And then I spoke to David Hodgson, and he just came up to me before this reserve game. He just went, if you let a goal in, I don't care, but I want you to come for everything. If you come and you don't, and we concede a goal, so I'm not bothered. I want you to come for everything. I want you to show me how good you are at dealing with crosses in the box and high balls at the box. So, and that was it. Like, that was the whole time I was at Darlington, that's what was probably that was the best part of my game. And he did that again. It's sort of like things that suit you, along with my English teacher. He was a manager that suited me, because that's exactly what I needed for my game to develop. It allowed me to concentrate. Instead of having that fear there and thinking about things, yeah, it allowed me just to concentrate on me play. And he's somebody, David Austin, there's another person who...
Had you watched him at Liverpool?
I watched him at Sunderland. He played for Sunderland. And it's funny, at my when I was 9 years old, he was giving the trophies at my school. It's funny, I've got a picture of me and me. I've got my little grey shorts on and T-shirt, and he's there with his sort of his mullet and his moustache and... we stayed in touch, and he's kind of, I've not really had an agent over my career. He was an agent before he was a manager, yeah, and then the agent, yeah, afterwards. Yeah. He's looked after me, and even now when I speak to him now, it's almost like I'm speaking to him when I'm 22 again. Like, you know,
it kind of feels like it was meant to be. From the prize coming to the career.
Well, the thing is, I was at Odense. I was sitting. I had a year left of my contract at Odense. I'd had all them back spasms. I hadn't played for first team football for a year. And then he picked up the phone and he said, do you want to go to Barnsley? I was like, yeah. He said, okay then. And that was it. People like that, there's a guy called Ian Swan, who's the guy who literally started my career. He came up to me when I was 8 years old in the swim baths, change room swim baths, and said to me, oh, you like playing goal, don't you? I thought, I've heard you're quite good. He's my teacher at the time, sports teacher. He says, yeah. He says, well, come to a training. So that's when I went for the school team. I came to touch him because I love him. He's a great bloke. But it's... just got gratitude towards these people,
like,
you know.
It's expressions like that and feelings like that that we made this for. You know, I'm sick and tired of football being portrayed as somewhere that's it's all dark and it's greedy and it's full of stupid people. And you just said, I love a guy who did good things by me when I was a budding youngster, and here we are. You're still very young, I don't know, 10 years later or whatever. and that relationship is important to you. A lot of big names in goalkeeping at the moment. Rather than going through them all in terms of like what they're good at and not good at, who, if we go through, you know, Ederson and De Gea and Alisson and Kepa and young Schmeichel, Subasic, yeah, Pickford, Ochoa, right across them all, Oblak, who in your, you know, top five, top six, who would be your top two just out of personal preference? And in that group of keepers at the moment, who do you think is underrated, misunderstood? Given enough credit,
I'll have a little bit to think about that, but I'll always go back to Buffon. He's the keeper that's, I know that I say that, you know, like so Grobbelaar and people like that, who like maybe is a bit more extravagant, you know.
They sure were. Yeah.
But I just like, I love everything about Buffon. I just love that him as a man. We can talk about things that he said and done in the past. We talk about
he's
that,
really that much of an inspirational figure
massively,
for you.
Massively.
I didn't know that.
The biggest thing for me that I took from him and that I admire about him, up until recently, you didn't really see him make any bad decisions. And I know that comes with playing with consistently with some of the best defenders, European football or world football scene, and the relationship that you build with them, knowing what each other's going to do. But up until the last couple of seasons, you didn't see him come running outside his box or coming for a ball that he was never going to get or panicked in. He was always cool. And when you've got a cool head, you make clear decisions.
Yeah, absolute leadership. We're winding towards an end, but I know what I want to ask you about to finish this up. Bet365 has said, for you, the greatest Premier League goalkeeper of all time, Premier League. Again, personal choice.
Yeah, it's just a tough one. I know many people will definitely say Peter Schmeichel, and that might be true, but he was so unique that most of the things that he did and the way that he was aggressive and assertive and proactive was because it worked for him. And I remember he did a masterclass, I think it was last season or the season before, on Sky on Monday Night Football. And he was writing everything that he said, and there was lots of examples of him sort of being dominating and authoritative, but everything that he did worked for him. And I think for a lot of goalkeepers, it wouldn't necessarily work. And he was very unique that way.
So you're saying not him?
There's one. It's another Man United goalkeeper, Edwin van der Sar. That I've always had a sort of a soft spot for him, because one of the first goalkeeping coaching videos I ever watched was him and Stanley Menzo and Franz Hook.
Gosh almighty, Stanley Menzo, I've not heard his name mentioned for a long time. Ajax. So this was at Ajax when Franz was there, still under Van Gaal as coach, and Franz would have been the goalkeeping coach. Not a very popular man at Old Trafford, Franz.
No, not
liked at all by David Ayer. I'm not selling secrets at school, it's the truth.
Yeah.
But somebody who succeeded a great deal and was a tutor for Van der Sar.
Yeah.
So you saw what then? That's where the affection comes from.
It was a little bit of the sort of the technique stuff that they worked on. That it was, I mean, obviously I couldn't understand what they were saying, but it was, you could see what they were working on, and a lot of it was simple stuff, but the biggest thing was the distribution and how unerringly accurate he was. For somebody who's like, was he 6'5" or something like that? He's a beanpole, doesn't particularly look like a silky footballer, but his technique was brilliant. His range of passing was brilliant. And it wasn't just that about him, it was just the way that we'd been led into this sort of cliche of a goalkeeper being sort of mad, shouting, screaming, ranting, raving, like Schmeichel. Like I said, but that worked for him. For most goalkeepers, that wouldn't work, simply because you get yourself that irate for the next 5 minutes. You're not good to anybody. Where he used it and was able to keep a calm head. Where with Van der Sar, he wasn't that goalkeeper. He was cool. He was calm, but he was still authoritative.
David, this has been an education. I hope you continue teaching people how to talk differently about the art of goalkeeping, and keep communicating, keep writing. Thank God for poetry and notebooks and Radio Luxembourg and that sort of slightly anxious 8 or 9 year old.
Can I just say thank you for inviting me here? It's been the most enjoyable hour and a half that I've had in a while.
Hopefully you enjoyed that big interview, which was first released as an exclusive to our socios 12 months ago. If you'd like to get these interviews on the first day that they're available, it's time for you to join us, to become a socio, and for only £2.99 a month, you will get an exclusive big interview plus regular mini documentaries, not only all ad-free, but all featuring me and bringing you interesting, funny, and sometimes scandalous things from Spanish football. Go to patreon.com/GrahamHunter to unlock our entire archive. That means that once you join, you will have a treasure trove of interviews with funny, elite, interesting, revelatory, top-class footballers. By joining us, you will help support this independent podcast. You will help to keep us on the road, interviewing people and sending that content for your delectation. If you go to the gym, you'll be slimmer. If you've got a dog, he or she will thank you. If you've got a TV, you can turn it off and listen to this instead.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.